Are you ready for an open discussion with the best of the best and the best of what's next? Welcome to the Tony D'Urso Show. Join in on a great conversation today with some of the world's great influencers as they showcase great advice and techniques that made them the game changers they are today. Now, here's Tony D'Urso.
Welcome and thanks for hanging out with us. Here's an entrepreneur who has an eye for opportunities. That's a little pun on words, which you'll get shortly. And also to clarify on our guests. Now, these are entrepreneurs just like you and I who made it to the top of their category. And I coined the term elite entrepreneurs many years ago, and I have a best-selling book by the same name. The word elite, it's a nice word to encapsulate someone who's made it to the top. And this has nothing to do with government by a few. I hope that's clear enough. We're going to talk about finding gold with Ian Foster. Now, many of us, or perhaps all of us, or nearly all of us, had to change gears when the events of 2020 hit the world. What were you doing at that time? Did you look for opportunities to better survive and earn a living? Are you paying attention to the opportunities when they show up? For example, did you understand the opportunity presented in one of my recent podcasts where you could probably make like $420 million a month by focusing on one simple need that we discussed? Now, opportunities are everywhere. They're boundless. How aware are you when they show up? And while we're at it, this is all about helping you and your friends turn your vision into reality. We want to help you get very successful at growing your business to a high, sustainable level. Okay, so now what happens when the world turns upside down? Do you look for a new business or do you stick to your guns and fix what you have? There's always choices. So what do you do? Well, here's someone who saw a recent opportunity and turned that into a thriving 7-digit business very quickly. Meet Ian Foster. He dives for gold in Alaska, but that's not his real business. He saw a need to improving human connection and developed something that you need to know about, a simple and better video camera. Let's get into it. Hi, Ian. Welcome to the Tony D'Urso Show.
Thanks, Tony. Appreciate the introduction.
Ian, we're all looking forward to finding gold, perhaps physically, but also and probably better for our audience. We want to find gold in opportunities. And I just absolutely love your story. So perhaps you could tell us, how did it all start for you?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of, I have a lot of sideways movement in my resume. And so trying to make a linear, you know, story of it, it's sometimes challenging, but I've never had less than 2 or 3 jobs. And I came up to Nome about 15 years ago with an opportunity to dive for gold. And it sounded crazy. And it's kind of opportunity I was looking for. And my first summer up here in Nome didn't pan out very well, pun intended. And I mean, I saw gold on the bottom of the ocean. I was in great shape, but it wasn't my operation. So someone controlled the opportunity. So I had to pivot back into social work. I worked for the state for a couple of years, got back into gold diving, ended up on a reality show. Got back into social work, working for the tribe, and then got back into gold diving. So I've kind of bounced around a little bit, but when 2020 hit, I was finishing up a master's in social work. I've always wanted to become a counselor. And so I had finally circled back to finishing up that degree. And so I was working with kids in a residential treatment center and as a substance use counselor with these kids. And, you know, 2020 hits. All of a sudden, we can't go in person to the internship sites anymore. And so I was forced to get online and do video conferencing in a counseling setting. I had been through, that was my second remote master's degree. And so I'd been online a lot, you know, in video conferences, but I had never really cared about the rapport, you know, in a video conference. And all of a sudden, these kids that I had built rapport with that were doing the work, all of a sudden, those relationships were tested by, you know, the deficits in the technology. And the framing of the problem was, I mean, it obviously sucked. That was the first thing. Like, the kids were looking all over the place. I was looking all over the place. And that rapport that we had in person just wasn't there when we switched to remote. And so the framing of the question was, well, what can make this suck less? And back to your original intro, you know, when 2020 hit, I mean, all of us, it was out of most of our hands to do anything about, you know, the governmental decisions, the actual virus decisions that were happening. You know, I mean, none of it was out of most of our control to do much about the bigger picture stuff. And in my experience, I don't like feeling helpless and like things are just happening to me. And so I, you know, you go down to, well, what can I control? You get down to that baseline, and that's a good feeling to know that, well, I can control this. You know, what's going on with my family? What's going on with my friends? Can I help people around me? Those are, you know, little things that we can control. Like people are hoarding toilet paper. So one thing you could control is like, well, am I sharing my toilet paper with my neighbors? Are they okay with toilet paper? There's like little micro decisions that you can make that help you feel like you have a certain amount of control in very crazy circumstances. For me, it was, well, how can I make video conferencing suck a little bit less? And so then my work in mining, I didn't realize how applicable it was to a lot of other areas. I thought I was learning a dying art, but, what I've been doing up here is solving, you know, fairly complex problems with limited resources and sometimes employing duct tape and baling wire to do it. And so I think outside the box when I look at problems. So when I was looking at the video conferencing problem, I didn't see, you know, a camera on the screen edge. I thought, well, what if we could put that camera in the middle of the screen? And all of a sudden we could look past the camera and see the person we're trying to talk to. And maybe that would approximate human eye contact a little bit better. And so I sourced the smallest USB enabled camera that I could find. I'm not rich, you know, and so I did what I could with the resources I had. But I am creative. That's a resource that I do have. And I know how to source things internationally. I've been doing that for years for my mining operations. So I found, you know, a decent prototype, duct tape and a zip tie entered to try to deliver it to the middle of the screen. That was my original flex tube. And then we spent all of 2020 developing that solution. There were about three or four other products that we had intended on launching that year. They were all travel related. And we had actually been pretty far down the development phase. But then, you know, travel shut down, you know, planes stopped flying. And all of a sudden we had to pivot really hard. So we looked at our list and we looked at, you know, what's the next best idea? And, you know, CenterCam was it.
That's very fascinating that sometimes our decisions with our opportunities are made for us. And I get that you were looking for something to do. You wanted to improve this. And now I want to know or understand better why. What was your purpose behind doing this? To make a lot of money? Where were you going with this? Why did you run down that road?
Well, like I said, I mean, financially, you know, I have bills to pay. You know, I can't be a philanthropist to my own passion projects yet. I would love to be able to do that. But I mean, the initial impetus for the CenterCam was I'd had these relationships severed, and I thought that potentially, maybe, just maybe, I could develop a tool that would help people connect better online. As the dynamics of post-COVID recovery, and there's new strains coming out, so I don't even really know how to phrase where we're at, but we're very clearly, we're traveling more, we're reintegrating, we're kind of getting back to, you know, normal. But as the new normal happens, it's clear that remote work is here to stay. It's clear that a lot of people aren't going back to the office. And when you think about, you know, the pluses on it, it's hard to think about going back to where we were 3 years ago from, you know, going into the office. So that being said, I mean, one of the solutions that, and one of the things that provides meaning to what we're doing, and this is the original impetus to it, is how, if I'm having this problem, I'm just a dude, you know, I'm not anybody, but if I'm a person that sees this as a major problem that I would love to have solved so I can not feel so disconnected with the people that I care about, my team gambled that maybe other people are having this problem too. And we didn't know when we launched the Kickstarter and the Indiegogo. I mean, it was still a gamble, and we didn't know if this was going to resonate with people. But back to your original question, the reason we've gotten where we are is because it did resonate with people. We weren't the only ones that thought that this is a compelling problem. And more importantly, now that we're so connected technologically, you know, to our tech, we're missing that human connection. And I think that's resonating with people, and an opportunity to, you know, not disconnect from people even while we're connected, you know, so connected technologically. I think that's the people thing that's resonating with people. And that's what drives us. That's our motivation. So in answer, you know, to your original question, I mean, we got to pay the bills. And I spend a lot of time in a profession that's really hard to make money at. So, you know, I'm trying to make up for a little bit of lost time as my friends were in their 20s and 30s, you know, getting into their careers and building up their 401ks. I've been taking big swings and I've struck out plenty of times, you know.
We're talking about Finding Gold with Ian Foster, and you can find him at thecentercam.com. Thecentercam, that's C-A-M, thecentercam.com. It's a really great camera. It caught my attention that then brought about this interview. I absolutely love the camera. I love what it does. I think it can really help improve the human connection, the human interaction, the human engagement, because we are mostly or more video now than ever. So I really believe in it. Check it out and tell me what you think about it. For those that are seeing this on video, you'll see that Ian is using it and he's looking right at me, and I really feel that connection a lot better. So I really feel that this camera it's got some great potential. So just a little plug on that. I like that. All right, now we're talking about finding gold. And as I mentioned, there's real gold and then there's golden opportunities. But I want to get this one out of the way. You started off kind of talking about you're a gold diver. You're in Alaska. You're diving for gold. You see the gold. Just kind of take us through maybe your best day or something on that.
Well, so I was looking for opportunities to get up to Alaska. Alaska was on my vision board for probably 4 or 5 years before I actually found the vehicle. And I mean, how opportunities like that work for me is I identify the thing that I want to experience. And then when I finally actually look at it, then all of a sudden doors start to open up. When I really say, no, I'm going to get to Alaska within the next year, then all of a sudden doors opened up. And so I was actually working in a media job as a writer, and I was moonlighting on the weekends at an underground mine. So I was working 7 days a week for about 3 months between, you know, just interviews and write-ups, and then going to work underground with some salt of the earth sort of folks. And anyway, a friend of mine knew a miner who was gold diving up in Alaska, and, you know, it's apples and fish. It's very different mining. It's totally different, but he thought miners, I should introduce you guys. And here we are. So anyway, I heard about gold diving. This guy was living on a beach diving for gold in the Bering Sea. And that sounded amazing. It sounded like as crazy of an experience as you could possibly have. And so I did what it took to get in the operation. I had a video camera. He thought it would be a good idea to get footage of the story and maybe we could sell it to a network or something. And that's not really how it works, but I had a video camera. I knew how to run it. I knew how to edit video. And so I said, hey, I can do that. I can do that. And he's like, well, can you shoot underwater footage? And I was like, yes, even though I'd never shot underwater footage, but I can figure it out. Right. And how hard can it be? It's just shooting a camera but underwater, which is very different, but I figured it out anyway. So about probably 3 weeks to a month after we met for the first time, I was on the beach in Nome, Alaska, diving for gold. So I saw that opportunity and just went for it. But as far as what we actually do, if you vacuumed your living room, you know what we do. We just do it on a boat. So a diver goes down at the end of the hose where, you know, your vacuum goes to the floor and sucks up dust in your living room. A diver is actually underwater with that hose and sucking up material. So it's either a 6, 8, 10 inch hose size diameter. And the diver is running it, sucking up gravel. All that gravel goes up to the surface. It gets classified in a thing called a sluice box. So all the heavy material like black sand, like garnet, gold, lead, it gets stuck in the sluice box, and then all the lighter material gets pushed out, like bigger rocks. Anything with kind of a flat profile usually gets pushed out. And then at the end of it, we're left with carpets. We clean those carpet, like the spongy carpets that you have in your front door. That's called miner's moss. And they used to use actual moss. That's where that came from. But luckily, you know, plastics, we have spongy plastic material now. Anyway, so we wring it out, clean it out, and then we're left to pan it. So we pan it at the end. And even people that don't gold mine, they always ask me about that. Do you pan it? And this is their motion with their hands. And yes, we end up panning it, and then we're left with gold. So a good day. I mean, over the course of a summer, it's kind of like a sales job. Like you'll have, you know, 2 or 3 days where you don't get anything, and then you'll have 2 or 3 in a day. And over the course of a month, you usually make your paycheck. It's the same way with gold. Sometimes you have a poor day, but then you have a day where you're getting, you know, 2 or 3 ounces in a day. It depends on the equipment you're running too. You know, the smaller, the less material you're running, the less you're making. But the more material you're running, the more it costs you to build the equipment to actually run it. So it's just kind of a, you know, cost benefit analysis of people with their budgets and their risk levels. But I've run medium sized suction dredges for almost 15 years now. Average day, I'm expecting to get 1.5 ounces, 2 ounces a day. We only get 50 dive days in a summer though. So now, you know, the math equation.
It sounds exciting, but it's also a tremendous amount of work for perhaps just not a whole lot of money when all the expenses and everything else is taken out. So very interesting. I had to get that out.
I could have done a number of different things if I was just going to go out and make more money. I could have done pretty much anything else. Probably would have made me more money than this. It was, and I don't know why, it was really compelling. I haven't been able to look away from it. It's been an amazing adventure. And once I got started, I just love doing it. And it's different than gold fever. It's kind of opportunity recognition. And I love the skills that I built while doing it. I love the lifestyle more than anything.
Well, yeah. And it's a lot of fun to just find gold. It just sounds like something that we all want to do. We want to find gold. And there's my segue into opportunities, perhaps the real gold for us entrepreneurs. And one thing I want to make sure I ask, perhaps my questions are a little bit out of sync, but that's okay. We're cool. Is with the center cam, you developed it, you put it together because you wanted that better human connection with who you speak with. Okay, so what have you noticed now that you have it in your interviews or your talks with people? What's changed, and tell us about that.
Well, it's to the point now that, I mean, I get feedback all the time. You know, people see me looking at them, and I appreciate your feedback from earlier. I am using it right now, and I'm looking straight at you. And so I'm not having to make choices, you know, with screen edge webcams, you have to look away and then look back down, you know, to make people feel like you're looking at them. So I've noticed the difference, but it's to the point now I've used it so much that I'm just having a normal conversation with somebody online. And when I really notice the difference is when I'm just working on my laptop and I don't have a center cam there, and I actually have to look away, because I know proper protocols are look into the camera lens when you're trying to like connect with somebody. And it's ironic, but you're actually looking away from the person. And I've trained myself to do that just as a video conference, you know, maybe not expert, but professional. And, so yeah, that's when I really notice the difference, is when I don't have it available and I have to go back to what it used to be. I notice a huge difference there.
Yeah, it makes all the difference, especially when you're playing back or watching a video, is where you really notice it the most, not necessarily on videos that you make. I'm speaking from experience, but I watch videos all the time on different platforms, and it makes a difference when the person is looking at me, at the camera, at the lens, as opposed to, you know, some historically, or should I say notoriously, never look at you. And it's like, it's not so interesting. It seems to make things more interesting as well. And I try to do that as well with what I work. Okay, so we've gone to that point and the difference that's made, and we've talked about opportunities. And so you took this, you put it on the market, and you raised a lot of money really, really quickly. So tell us how to do that. And obviously your gold mining days didn't affect that. So you're new at this, but here you are, you just raised a lot of money. So I'd like to learn more about that.
Yeah. I mean, there's challenges that come from fast growth as well. You know, when I started the Kickstarter, I had a couple of advisors who were really knowledgeable, but I was doing everything. I shot and edited all the video, all the marketing pieces. I figured out Facebook advertising. I figured out how to, you know, launch on Kickstarter. I figured out, and that's not just like having a business name and a checking account number and like putting a video up. I mean, there's a whole science to the pre-launch. And so I spent basically the fall of 2020 figuring out how to launch on Kickstarter, you know, on a crowdfunding site. I mean, I basically had just to figure all this stuff out. I'd never done any of it. You know, I'd shot and edited video and I knew how to tell a story. But I just trusted that I would be able to figure out stuff as I figured it, you know, as the problems came up. Now as we've got into it there, I really thought there's a potential that I'm crazy here. You know, this is it was a big swing, but when you think of, when you articulate it, wait, you want to put a camera in the middle? It's like, you want to put a camera on a stick in the middle of the screen and you want people to buy that and that's going to help them. Like, what does that even mean? You know? And there's plenty of Facebook trolls that have said something to that effect with more colorful language. So I've dealt with a lot of that stuff. But I mean, what drove me personally to go through all of that is I had had enough practice at businesses that were decent ideas, but I just stopped short of, you know, the end goal of, you know, product to market or making them bigger. I knew enough about the business building process to know a lot of times, even a bad idea, if you push it long enough and you recalibrate, you can make a bad idea into a good idea if you just listen to the market, basically. And so this was one I wasn't going to look away from unless, you know, the Kickstarter said, this is really stupid. If we didn't hit our initial goal on Kickstarter, we wouldn't be where we are. But, you know, the story and the tech, it resonated with people. And so we kept on going. And at the end of the day, I mean, if it really hadn't resonated, because I've since met people that have been in video conference space for well over a decade, and I'm a new entrant and I know my place in the universe. I'm pretty aware of that and my limitations and our team's limitations. But there's people that thought of this a long time before we did, but the timing wasn't right. And it took a pandemic to put video conferencing in front of all of our faces and to open up the idea that maybe things could be a little bit better. I don't know that we could have done what we did in 2017. Maybe. I don't know that it would have hit nearly, I don't think it would have had nearly the impact, and I don't think it would have been nearly as compelling for people as it was in, you know, early 2021.
Makes perfect sense. You took advantage of the opportunity. So because it started off initially and people started like rolling with it and supporting it, that was the impetus to continue going?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know that. I mean, financially, I ran out of money about halfway through the Kickstarter. Like I had to borrow money to pay for the marketing. And that was right when we had a Facebook ad hit and go viral. And that's when you need to hit the gas on marketing. And I just about ran out of money at that time. I had to borrow money to pay for the Facebook ads to blow it up. And that was when I realized, okay, no, this is something. Like, things don't go viral unless there's a lot of energy around them. And for positive or negative, but for ours, it was about half and half. About half of the people, the trolls, were actually helping us go viral by saying, this is ridiculous. But we were watching the sales numbers also go up, you know, at an incredible clip. And that was the moment when we were like, okay, I'm not crazy. This can be a thing. And, you know, then I had to get some other people on board because it was growing too fast for me to handle it alone.
So at that point, Ian, it was just rolling well, or did you have any big failure perhaps that, or challenge that made you just want to throw in the towel and say,
oh my gosh, man. So 2021, when I launched on the Kickstarter, we had developed the camera to the point where it was good enough to sell in the marketplace. That's how far we were. There were some things, but there's constant improvement with technology. You know, you constantly, there's, you know, maybe the white balance isn't quite where you want it to be. The microphone can be improved. There's lots of little things that you're constantly improving when it comes to, you know, technical gadgets like center cam. And so we weren't done, but we had a product that was good enough to launch. And that's a sticking point that I find a lot of, I have a lot of friends that get in their own way. They let the great be the enemy of the good, you know, or they try to over-engineer and they spend so much time building that they never actually test it and see if, hey, this could be viable. But for us, so we had that initial product. I had enough camera. I think I had like 400 cameras or something. I mean, it was pretty humble compared to where we, what we've done now, but I had that, you know, paid for, ready to ship. And then we ended up selling, I think 620 cameras in our Kickstarter. So I went with that, you know, Kickstarter money, bought a bunch more inventory, and then kind of heard crickets for about a month from our manufacturer. And I'd already bought product from them. I knew that product came pretty quick. And so I was like, hey, what's the deal? And they came back and said, hey, sorry, we can't buy the chip that we used to use in this camera. And we can't buy it at any price anywhere in the market. Remember, chipset shortage. Now we're kind of getting out of that as well. But 2021, the story in the tech industry was chipset shortage. Like GM, Ford are still dealing with it. Tesla was able to pivot. But I mean, even if you're not even very, like, if your algorithm, your Google News algorithm isn't like anything to do with tech, you probably heard about the chipset shortage. And so all of a sudden they had to rechip the camera with a chip that was available. And then by that time, we're probably $250,000, $300,000 into the Indiegogo crowdfund raise. So we switched from Kickstarter, rolled it into an Indiegogo crowdfund in the meantime while we're like getting product. And then I had been messaging, hey, we're about a month to, you know, 30 to 45 days out, because that's what I had purchased already. Well, come to find out, no, we were actually closer to 5 months out. And so I had, which is a very different number. And I have kind of an overly developed sense of right and wrong and integrity. And that was a very uncomfortable position to be in. I'm the face and the voice of these messages. And all of a sudden I have to tell everybody, hey, I'm sorry, you'll get your product. We're not just like living on a fancy island on vacation with this money, like, but it's going to take some time. We've had to rechip. So that was a major sideways movement. That was a very difficult time for our company. I mean, everybody wanted it now and we couldn't provide it. And we hadn't built the relationships with major chip suppliers that we have now. We're in the middle of building a new camera and we're going straight to the chip manufacturer. But at that time, there's no way they would have spoken with us. You know, we're nobody and we're a very small company. So that was crazy. Stressful. It was a crazy pivot. What's that?
That's highly stressful.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
And on top of that, you're married and you have a new child and you're balancing life and work. So let's kind of go into that with all this. It's not just you're doing work. You've got major emergencies happening, but you also have a family. So let's talk about balance and balancing life and work.
Yeah, that's a really good question, Tony. And I got married late. I mean, I'm 43 and we're about to have our 2-year anniversary. And I just had my first kid and she just turned 9 months tomorrow. And so, yeah, I'm a little bit late to the family game, but I like to think that I just needed a little bit more time. That's what I'm telling myself about that. And what that allowed me to do is just kind of learn how to manage my emotional state and not cross-pollinate the emotions that you could feel in a day. Because just because things are going crazy in business, at the end of the day, I've had money and I've lost money. I've leveraged every asset that I have multiple times and I paid off the debt multiple times. And so I've been there with money. I can find enough to eat and pay rent, you know, or mortgage, whatever. But it's important to me that I don't, no matter how crazy things are in the day, it's important for me to not put that off on my partner. That also comes from social work. I mean, I've had some crazy days. There's some investigations that I've been involved in from Child Protective Services that I'm never going to talk to anybody about. I don't even want to tell a therapist about. Like, that's just going to, it's going to die with me, you know? And that's just not energy that I want to put back out into the world. I spend a lot of time studying too, because I know for me, I have a very active emotional, inner emotional life. Like I feel things very deeply. And the problem with like those sorts of emotional swings of an artist, I'm a creative person, and I have an inner artist that just feels very deeply, is sometimes you need to kind of squelch that so you can be steady enough to help other people be steady. And so I studied it. Like, who are people that dealt with some crazy stuff? I've studied Abraham Lincoln, and you think about what he dealt with in the Civil War. How did he do that? He was a human and he felt things very deeply. And how did he deal with that? You know? And the answer is he just did. You know, he realized what he believed in, the cause that he believed in was solid enough that it was worth whatever it took to make it happen. And you think of all of our presidents, you look at Obama, you look at Biden, you look at anybody. And you know, they're compartmentalizing a lot of those emotions. And so I learned that it's okay to do that. That's not a lack of genuineness or authenticity. You just have to do that as a mature adult. And so we would have some crazy days. There's some times I didn't know what to do. And when you come home though, your family's always going to be there as long as you treat them as if they're always going to be there. And so I just make time every day. Luckily I do work from home, so there isn't a commute involved. I can take the micro times, the micro moments, you know, throughout the day when I'm getting lunch to hang out with my baby for a minute and check in with my wife. So I'm really lucky that way. As a startup, you know, it takes the right partner too. My wife's amazing. She understands that sometimes I just have to work till midnight, 1 o'clock. I'm dealing with international suppliers, and sometimes that's when the communication happens. You know, China wakes up at like 8 a.m, or they wake up about 6 p.m. our time. So, you know, if you want to get anything done, you want to have 2 or 3 communications in an evening. Like sometimes you're going till 11 or 12 at night. And so I guess the shorter answer to your question is that I do my very best to make sure that I'm having multiple moments that are meaningful in a day's time. And I do my very best to take the call whenever my wife calls or texts and respond to it, to make sure that she knows that she's a priority no matter what my busyness looks like. And then I also compartmentalize emotionally, and I never take that out on other people, you know, when things are going crazy. I keep that in its own space, and then I let my family have the most stable, nice version of me. Not that I'm an a-hole or anything, but you know, sometimes things get tense.
Ian, you just mentioned getting advice from presidents, past and present presidents, and studying them and learning from them. Where do you go for your advice? Where do you go for mentors? Do you have someone that you consult with, that consults with you now? How does that fit, and where do you get your wisdom and advice to keep on?
Yeah, that's a great question too. Look at you. You've done this before, Tony. So my wife is incredibly wise. She understands me in a way. That's why I married her. I felt like a genuine understanding of who I am and what I'm trying to accomplish, and which is, I think, different than managing other people. You know, she understood me in a way that I really appreciated. And here we are. We got a kid now. I have a business coach. His name's Murray, and he's pretty good. I have a lot of friends. I started an entrepreneurial group back in college. And that was right when I was about to buy my first home. And I just knew I needed to know so much more than I did. And so I invited all the young businessmen that I could think of that would accept the invitation. And we started having weekly meetings, and There's a core group of about seven or eight of us that have stuck together since college. And so, and it's really interesting how diverse they are. We've got a couple of them that are in banking. All of them have some sort of real estate portfolio. There's a couple of that are in e-commerce. Some are in just, you know, regular finance outside of banking. And I mean, really diverse expertise there. So from a business standpoint, and they're also good dudes. You know, they're people that I really appreciate. They love their families and they treat them right. And they know that it's more about, there's more to life than, you know, making money. So they're the right kind of people to have around me.
Very cool. And I know we're kind of focused a little bit on one product. You talked about how things have changed and et cetera, mm-hmm. et cetera. We have one product that's successful. It's a hit. What else is planned for the future? What do you see coming down the pike?
We have a couple of other products. Now that traveling is opening up, we're developing a couple of other travel products that we want to bring to market. I constantly go throughout my day and I have ideas for making products either better or new products I Google them to make sure they're not already out there. One of my original ideas, I mean, this is back in my late teens, was a hat stretcher. My baseball hat from my freshman year, it didn't fit me anymore when I got to be a senior, but I liked the hat and it was in good shape. It was a nice wool fitted hat. And so I thought, hey, a hat stretcher. And then I didn't even circle back to that until recently. I went on Amazon and found a hat stretcher. It's this piece of wood with a little screw device in the middle of it. And it stretches my hats out. I don't have to produce that one is the point of that story. Somebody else did it and it's great. And you can get it on Amazon for like $17.95. But other ideas don't exist. We have a couple of travel products that don't exist right now. So that's what we're working on. And we also have accessory products too. We're working on some lighting kits for our video conference. A lot of people come to us. We have a small light right now, but we're kind of growing in the whole video conference space. So we're working on some software for a virtual webcam. We have some lighting kits. So within CenterGam, there's tons of room for development of new products, but then we have also some totally independent products.
That makes me think right now, the website that I've given out to the audience is thecentercam.com. These mm-hmm. other products, would they all be listed there, do you think, or perhaps?
No, they're going to be totally unrelated. Yeah, it would be a totally different website.
All right. Well, you can always put, I guess, on there and see our other products at. Well, very good. This has been very informative, very interesting. Finding Gold with Ian Foster. You can find him again at thecentercam.com. I think we've found some gold. There's always opportunities no matter what happens. And it's just a matter, I guess, of how to look at it, because you saw this need and you realized, I think that was really the key, is recognizing that it's an opportunity that you could actually go somewhere with, because unless you're looking, it'll just go over your head. Perhaps one final comment on that, Ian, on the recognition that it is an opportunity to pursue.
Yeah, the whole process of learning how to recognize opportunities has been a journey for me. I mean, I wasn't born that way. I've always been creative, but knowing what to do with an idea, I've had a number of false starts along the way. And, sometimes it got caught up in the mid to early 2000s, it was hard to find injection molding in the US. And if you could, you were looking at $40,000 to $50,000 entrance fee and, plus business costs on top of that. And when you just had an idea, I mean, that's pretty expensive. Now those costs, some of those ideas that I had back in the early 2000s, I didn't A, have the business network, B, the money, C, the confidence to put it all together. I've spent a bunch of time figuring out all three of those things. And so it's just a different business environment for me. But I mean, for other people starting out, there's tons, like you said, I love the way you said that. I mean, there's opportunities everywhere. And a lot of times it just takes putting on different glasses and seeing things a little bit differently. And not accepting the world that we see that is the way that it is. And that has to do with social problems. It has to do potentially with romantic relationships. And it definitely has to do with gadgets. new gadgets are coming around every day. So it just depends on if you're willing to pay the price, go down the rabbit hole, and sometimes the rabbit hole chooses you. I mean, this process has been delightful for me. Like I couldn't stop, you know, along the way. I had to see this through. And those are the really exciting projects to get involved in, where you just can't look away. You've got to keep on going and find a project like that, you know, find a problem like that, that you just have to try to solve, and you're going to see some magic in your life.
And I guess if you're seeing some success, you know you've got something good. If you've seen some income or trolls, that was another comment I wanted to make. If a lot of trolls show up and say something, you know you're hitting a nerve. So continue, because they'll help you go viral.
Yeah, that was the thing. And it was really painful. You know, I remember, you know, reading the, so this is, I mean, I put everything I have into this. You know, I was newly married. Didn't have a lot of money. I know I'm about to run out of money if I actually push this ad campaign where it needs to go. And these trolls have the nerve to say, you know, it's stupid or whatever they said. And I knew it was personal, because I didn't have the validation that I have of the last year and a half of this idea really resonating with people. Early on in the process, that was also incredibly difficult for me to deal with, because I was like, well, you know, well, what if the trolls get steam and all of a sudden this becomes a joke or whatever? But what I realized from the ad standpoint is that every troll that commented, and then the other troll friends that commented again and just like had their little troll fest, all of that increased my ad algorithm and made the ad go viral. So without the trolls making those comments and liking and sharing and saying, this is stupid, it wouldn't have gotten in front of so many true believers that actually do have the problem. They actually do want to connect with people online, and they're like, oh my gosh, this is the tool I've been looking for. So, I mean, we learned to embrace the trolls pretty quickly, and it was a different paradigm shift. Cause I don't know many people that outside of politics anyway, that enjoy being made fun of, and, you know,
well, thank you,
we embraced it. What's that?
I said, thank you, trolls.
Absolutely. Yeah. Embrace the trolls.
I am positive that trolls are paid by somebody, because they don't listen to the podcast. They have no idea what you're talking about. They don't know the title of your podcast. They don't know your guest. They don't know what your guest is famous for. And they say something so bizarre off the wall. It's like, are you talking to me? You know, it's just so weird. So somebody's got to be paying them, because, hey, you can at least listen to the show and say something. But anyways.
Yeah. Well, some trolls are bots, but then, I mean, based on my psychology background, I mean, I know the trolls, you know, their childhood was pretty difficult. So that's the humanity of it. Like, why would you spend your time online ripping people apart? Why would you do that?
Ian Foster, thank you so much for helping us on Finding Gold. I thank you so much for sharing with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Tony. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for hanging out with me while I featured an elite entrepreneur who took his vision to reality. We discussed finding gold with Ian Foster. Now, as an entrepreneur, it's all about finding and recognizing a good opportunity that we feel that we can successfully tackle and win at. And while a real diver for real gold, Ian discovered gold in looking for a better way to connect with people online. He saw that there was a need here for better engagement, human connection, and he wanted to improve that. And he came up with the Center Camp. And we talked about his running two different GoFundMe, kickstarting type platforms here, and what that took. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of money. And it's not an easy thing. It's a career. It's a job. You really got to apply yourself to it. And then when you enter in the family, we talked about balancing life and work. And we talked about the type of guidance that he got. That was very interesting. First time anyone ever mentioned that they get guidance or have obtained guidance from a past or present president. Very interesting. As well as he has a business coach and, of course, our spouse. Our spouse has helped us successful entrepreneurs so much. I could do a whole program on just how vital our spouse is in helping us succeed and just being there, even if it's just that litmus test or the barometer on I want to try something. You that are there, you know what I'm talking about. And let me leave it there with you. And you tell me, What did we discuss that resonated with you? What's your story? And please remember supporting the show with a nice review on Apple Podcasts. If you have any Apple device, you win, you qualify. Would just absolutely love it. And of course, I say this all the time, share this with a few friends, because it's friends helping friends that are going to get us through everything just fine. All right, let's use this and let's help you move on your journey to success. Thanks. Remember, just take action. Success awaits those who persevere and remain steadfast despite the odds. Sow good seeds, do good deeds, and join me on the next episode of The Tony D'Urso Show.
We hope you've enjoyed this week's edition of The Tony D'Urso Show with his key influencers. Be sure to tune in again next Friday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, 2 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Influencers Channel.